Hi, everyone. Dan Cassidy here. Welcome back to Top of the Morning on the UBS Market Moves podcast channel. We are back after the President's Day long weekend, which gave investors a short reprieve from the Trump 2.0 news flow that has been nonstop over the past 4 weeks. That policy news may pick up this week, but the economic news is relatively light over the next few days. However, that doesn't mean the markets will be calm. So joining me today here in studio in 1285, glad to welcome back Head of Asset Allocation for the Americas with the UBS Chief Investment Office, Jason Dreho. Jason, glad to be back with you here on set. Welcome back. A lot to catch up on.
Welcome back to you, Dan. I hope you had a great vacation. Good to be
Thank
here.
Thank you. Yeah, it's great to be back, Jason. So as I mentioned, a lot has been happening in the markets with headlines. Let's perhaps begin with economic data. I know last week we did receive some notable data points, which investors were very much focused on, accounting for the January inflation data, as well as retail sales. So I'm curious to hear, Jason, your assessment, what the latest data says about the state of the U.S. economy.
Well, going into last week, I would describe the data over the prior 2 months, perceiving that to be relatively benign on the growth and inflation front, like, good story overall. The data last week would be, let's call it like some minor hiccups in what it signals about the state of the economy. You know, so it wasn't quite as clean. So starting with the inflation data, the big piece was the CPI data for January. It came in above expectations, certainly caused the markets to react pretty strongly after the news came out Wednesday morning. But as you kind of got into the details, it sort of indicated is that there was a number of categories that increased significantly. So it wasn't just one thing, but it wasn't across the board. So something like motor vehicle insurance increased up to 2%. We saw some travel and airfares increase significantly. But the thing that I think requires a little bit of a caveat to the data is that we've seen now for a few years in a row a strong seasonal aspect to the data. So like it jumps in January. Things like auto insurance tend to be reset January 1. So you see this sort of annual kind of adjustment. The models that try and smooth this out, like the seasonal adjustment models, are having a little bit of difficulty trying to capture it. So there's a seasonal aspect that would suggest it's hot now, but if we look at last year, then it kind of moderated as the year went on. So there is some aspect there that, don't take this as a sign of a new trend. Take this as perhaps as a bit of a one-off. Also important is that the shelter part of inflation, and particularly the owner's equivalent rent that had been very sticky for a long period of time. On a month-over-month basis, that was up 30 basis points. The prior month was around 31 basis points. The prior month of that was around 20. So you're seeing a real sort of step down in that piece of the inflation story. If you go back 18 months, that was running at 0.6, 0.7. This is critical because if you stripped out the shelter part of inflation, CPI has been running around 2% for a while. And so the fact that this shelter OER piece is going lower suggests that going forward, that will continue to be sort of disinflationary for inflation for the rest of the year. So again, putting the January data in kind of overall context. And then on Thursday, we got the PPI data, which was more in line with expectations. And what economists can do is look at the different components of CPI and PPI data, weight them accordingly for how the PCE data is constructed. And that's what the Fed focuses on, the core PCE. And that suggests that, on a month-over-month basis, it'll be more moderate in terms of how much it increases. Year over year, it's likely to go from around 2.8% to 2.6%. So when we get that inflation data, assuming this forecast is more accurate, then it will still show that generally inflation is headed lower. So headline initial reaction was negative inflation. And it does kind of raise a little bit of eyebrows, this has been the concern that inflation could run hot, but it's not a change of overall narrative that suddenly inflation is accelerating. That's kind of the key takeaway. On Friday, then we got to retail sales for January. It definitely fell short of expectations. The forecast says it would grow 0.3% month over month. It came in at minus 0.8%, and this is the core kind of retail sales. You strip out kind of gas and energy, which can fluctuate a lot month to month. So definitely a disappointment. This could reflect some payback from a lot of spending in November, December. It could be a January seasonal effect. The seasonal adjustments have a hard time capturing it. But perhaps it also reflects a little bit of uncertainty among the consumers about some of the policy directions, particularly on inflation and tariffs. There's concern among some consumers that it's going to cause prices to go higher. That could be altering their spending patterns. We did see the week prior to that, the University of Michigan Consumer Survey the one-year ahead inflation expectations jumped from 3.3 to 4.3%. Again, so probably reflecting some of those inflation concerns. You see in a different walk of or business data, the NFIB Small Business Survey, optimism surged post the election, pulled back a little bit in January. But if you look at things like hiring plans and CapEx plans, those have actually been not really increasing as much. So it's as if you ask small business owners, what's your outlook for the economy? Oh, it's really improved. Do you plan to hire more? No. So it's a little bit of, I think that's a reflection.
You have to really read into the data.
So I think it reflects a little bit of, especially with you know tariffs and some of the other policy uncertainty, it is perhaps weighing a little bit on you know the private sector, the consumers and businesses. We need more data though to kind of get a sense whether this is one off. So I'd say still relatively benign, but a few things kind of worth monitoring going forward, and it would suggest that after things being relatively calm and benign, we could get a narrative shift, as I kind of call it, in the next couple of months. We saw that last year, multiple pivots from Goldilocks to suddenly stagflation concerns to suddenly recession concerns last summer, then back to reflation concerns or focused by the election. It's been sort of the same story for a few months. We could get a bit of a pivot to something that's less favorable in the near term, just because the growth data, the inflation data isn't maybe as well behaved as it's been recently.
And when thinking about inflation, retail sales, of course, one set of data points, not indicative of a trend. So we will see what the data reveals in the weeks and months ahead.
Well, certainly one data point's not a trend, but if you get two data points, sometimes investors can extrapolate and draw inferences that are still not reflective of the underlying trend, which is why I think so far, it hasn't really disrupted the overall macro narrative. But if we get into March and the data starts saying something similar, where the consumer spending is weak or inflation continues to run a little bit hot, you start to get, I'm sure that then, the market will start to trade off of concerns like, is this reflecting a pivot point in the data in some way?
Yep, a lot to watch out for in the months ahead. And I recall last week, Jason, outside of the abundance of economic data, investors had a lot to digest with respect to developments from the new administration. This accounts for tariffs, further activity by DOGE, even negotiations over budget deals in Congress. That's ramping up as well. So where, Jason, does all of this policy stand? And what does it mean for the economy?
Well, let's go with tariffs. We already know from a couple weeks ago that the 25% tariff on Canada and Mexico, that was delayed at least until March 4th. It may be implemented. It may get a further extension. And then President Trump had talked about reciprocal tariffs. Initially, that was a little bit unclear what that entailed. It's still, the details remain to be seen because, there was going to reports last week of a big announcement on reciprocal tariffs. And what the announcement actually entailed was after the Commerce Department, the U.S. Trade Representative, other government agencies that are related to commerce or trade are going to report back by starting April 1st, looking at different trade practices, tariff levels by different countries. And if depending on that, that could lead to reciprocal action. So it really means no action in the near term. It may take well into the summer before some action is done. What that entails is still a little bit unclear. If you take it sort of literally, if another country has a 5% tariff on goods from the U.S. on, say, clothing, and the U.S. has a 0% tariff, the reciprocal would be the U.S. applies a 5% tariff to those goods coming to the U.S., so they match. But they could take a broader view of what reciprocal means because, there could be, anti-dumping measure or dumping measures in certain countries. There could be, like in Europe, a VAT tax that is sort of effectively sort of kind of can function a little bit like perhaps a tariff, other means that are sort of not direct tariffs, but could be viewed as anti-free trade measures that could cause the administration to want to apply something. But I think the key thing out of all this is that if you follow that up, what was actually announced and with also the delay in the Canada-Mexico tariffs, that the way I think investors are still treating this, rightly or wrongly, is that a lot of sound and fury, a lot of threats, a lot of loud, kind of bark, but the actual bite so far has been relatively modest. And that's how it's going to play out, that this is all still designed to get negotiations, get countries to do concessions, that ultimately most of these tariffs won't be applied. We'll see, but that's kind of how the markets are interpreting
it. So starting from an extreme and walking it back, depending on how the negotiations progress.
Well, the term we use is like escalate to de-escalate.
Sure.
And so I think that's how the markets are sort of perceiving that. So that's one policy front on DOGE. Obviously, a lot of you know, headline, you know, numbers. And as we speak, I can see in the crown of the bottom of the news, there was something about Musk saying we've identified trillions of dollars of spending we can't, you know.
Hard to keep up with all of these headlines.
It's also like, you know, the federal government only spends a certain amount of money, and I think it's, you know, can't all be unaccounted for.
Right.
A lot of activity in terms of potential layoffs. Look, it's still almost unclear what this will entail. You know, there's still questions about, you know, what, you know, DOGE can do in terms of cutting, because it is Congress that determines spending. It's up to the executive branch to execute that and spend the money. There's some discretion on what they can do, but not entirely. So a lot of headlines now, when it's all said and done, 3 months, 6 months down the line, will spending cuts be that significant or not? I think remains to be seen. It's also important to put in perspective that the discretionary spending for the federal government is about 15% of the total budget. Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, that's fixed. Defense spending, it's not going to be really impacted. And significantly, interest on the debt payments, that's not going to be impacted. That is 85% of spending. And so even if you have like federal government, you know, workers resigning or quit, in any given year, around 200,000 federal employees leave the government, just, you know, attrition for whatever it is. So if you hear about 65,000, you know, people taking, you know, payouts like that, they might have just put anyway at some point during the year. Mm-hmm. So again, the magnitude, you know, what actually will end up happening is still remains to be seen. It's probably a little bit less than what is all the headline news is kind of suggesting, but, you know, still to be determined. And then on the budget negotiations, you know, there is a deal, some sort of deal has to be done by March 14th. Otherwise, government funding runs out, the government will shut down. Perhaps the Republicans or some wouldn't mind that. We'll see. They have to raise the debt ceiling at some point in time. They have to have a deal to extend the tax cuts, which it's, I think that's uniform agreement they want to do that. Is it one bill or two bills? The House is looking down the path of one bill. The Senate wants to do two. Last week, what passed was a budget resolution, essentially allowing up to $4 trillion of spending increases over 10 years. So they have to kind of figure out how do they kind of offset that. So a lot of negotiations will take place. This will be more difficult. It's also not something that can be done by executive order. So unlike some of what's been done thus far, this will definitely kind of be more of a slow grind. And ultimately, like a lot of these policy measures, it might be a lot of sound and fury, but the actual economic implications are relatively modest in the big picture. What is, you know, an issue, though, is that the direction near term is uncertainty can weigh on the economy, the potential for spending cuts and just, you know, literally money not being, you know, given to different government agencies, you know, could be, you know, impacted. Some workers being laid off near term, you could see some impact. So I think it skews more towards a downside in terms of, you know, economic consequences, in terms of growth, and which kind of goes into the prior question of like, economy's okay, but there is a risk that near term things could, you know, could get a little bit worse before they perhaps kind of get better later in the year or next year.
Well, I suspect investors will be closely monitoring those headlines surrounding congressional budget negotiations in the weeks ahead, as that deadline at this point is less than a month away. So, Jason, given everything that's ahead of us, coupled with what we've seen over the past week, accounting for the economic data, news out of the Trump administration, how have markets been digesting all of this?
Quite well. In some ways, we've been meeting with the S&P is just a little bit below its all-time high. And today, based on futures, it could set a new all-time high. Treasury yields have been relatively kind of contained and benign. I would point out that since, you know, it's been 4 weeks since the inauguration, since Trump 2.0 officially began. And during that time period, the S&P 500 has traded in a pretty narrow range of, you know, a high of 61.18 and a low of 59.94. It's about a 2% range if you kind of measure, the, you know, that gap. The 10-year Treasury yield has gone from like 4.42% to a high of 4.64, so about 22 basis point range. Pretty narrow. You know, the VIX volatility index is at 16.5. So relatively contained when you consider all the policy uncertainty. And there is a economic policy uncertainty index that, you know, has surged to levels that hasn't been really since, you know, during the height of the pandemic and, you know, kind of near peak levels over the past, you know, 20 years. Given, you know, that sort of uncertainty, you think markets would be more choppy and volatile, but all things considered, they've been relatively kind of, you know, well-behaved, which suggests that, again, going back to, you know, lots of bark, you know, not much bite, or the idea that a lot of talk about fiscal changes, but ultimately just maintaining the status quo is going to kind of what the end result will be. The economy is in relatively good shape. Corporate earnings that we got for 4Q, you know, better than expected, you know, so solid earnings growth, you know, guidance going forward, good, but not great. So you can see why the markets are kind of holding steady. But it also sort of, I think, reflects the fact that investors are kind of either, one, completely overwhelmed by the information flow. I just don't know how to react and like what to make sense of it. Or two, again, going like it's sort of like, all right, lots of noise, but the signal suggests really ultimately not much change. And therefore, until we get clarity on like what it means for the economy, for growth, for inflation, positive or negative, markets are going to stay in a holding pattern. As we get more information, perhaps that will change. But for the time being, that's kind of how the markets have been trading. Certainly some activity underneath the surface. If you look outside of the U.S., it's been good performance elsewhere. European equities are up close to 12% year-to-date. EM equities in China were starting to bounce a little bit last week. So one thing that is notable this year is that the U.S. exceptionalism story that was very dominant last year for the economy, for the markets, that hasn't been the case thus far in the first roughly 6 weeks, 7 weeks into the year. Whether that continues or not, that remains to be seen. But that's how the markets have been trading. It's almost a little bit of like less than feared in terms of Trump policies that's beneficial to the rest of the world. But so far, by and large, kind of holding steady.
So investors seem to be taking all of this in stride. You mentioned how U.S. equity indices nearing all-time highs, considering as well some of these uncertainties in the weeks ahead surrounding economic components, notably inflation, of course, everything happening in D.C. How should investors think about positioning their portfolios at the moment, Jason?
Well, we came into the year with certain views on how the markets would perform, how the economy would perform, sort of key messages. Mm-hmm. And despite this massive news flow, I wouldn't say that it requires a substantial kind of rethink. And the markets, the fact that they've been very range bound is sort of consistent with that view. So even though near term there could be some hiccups in the growth data and the inflation data, ultimately we think the policies by the administration will be market friendly, or at least not market averse. Because I think one thing is we think that Trump does care about how the market performs as a gauge of as his success as in terms of economic leadership. The economy overall for the year, the conditions should be relatively benign, similar to last year, meaning there'll be hiccups and different trends of the data, but the underlying story is still relatively constructive. That's the underlying economic story. That should be then supportive for equities to grind higher as by end of the year. We still see upside, sort of more to go in equities. Within the tech sector, it's been choppy this year, and like the DeepSeek news certainly caused some turbulence, and it's actually one of the weaker sectors year to date, the tech sector. But ultimately, the AI thesis, we think, is still in place, and nothing out of the earnings season suggests that that's not the case. And if there is uncertainty and concern about the economy, what would investors do? Good chance they kind of flight to safety is that they go out and buy the secular stories that that have performed well. So again, feel comfortable about the AI opportunity, sort of seize the AI opportunity. Regarding rates, as we drift a little bit higher, these are levels where, again, it gets to kind of the higher end of the range. But depending on how inflation plays out with the policy news, it's certainly conceivable that the 10-year could get back up to 4.75 or even higher, which is why we still prefer more of the belly part of the curve, like the 5-year point. So you're not taking a lot of duration, not taking a lot of credit risk, staying up in quality overall. A lot of political risk, and so one way to navigate that, only one list to sort of manage it is gold, which is something that we continue to like. We've upgraded our forecast. So we see the gold at 3,000 by March and kind of staying around those levels for the rest of the year. Good inflation hedge, but there's also a sort of secular story where central banks are buying gold in significant numbers. It's sort of a strong bid that's supporting the markets. And some of that can deal with just the geopolitical uncertainty. You want to diversify their holdings, a little bit less dollars, perhaps more gold. So that's another thing that we like. So those are things that we said at the start of the year that hasn't really changed despite a lot of certainly news flow. On the markets and your sort of behaving consistent with that.
Well, Jason, very productive conversation to begin this holiday short in trading week. Great to be back on the mics with you. We covered a lot of ground today, and there is a lot we will cover next Monday. So looking forward to that, Jason. Thanks again.
All right. Thank you. Have a great week.
Thank you for tuning in. Be sure to visit ubs.com/studios to view the entire UBS Studios suite of podcast channels, along with our video offerings, such as UBS Trending. You can also follow us on Instagram for content highlights, at UBS Trending. UBS Studios is part of the UBS Chief Investment Office within UBS Global Wealth Management. Visit ubs.com/CIO to view the latest research.
UBS Chief Investment Office's investment views are prepared and published by the Global Wealth Management Business of UBS AG or its affiliate, UBS. This material has no regard to the specific investment objectives, financial situation, or particular needs of any specific recipient and is published for informational purposes only. As a firm providing wealth management services to clients globally, UBS AG and its subsidiaries offer both investment advisory services and brokerage services. Investment advisory services and brokerage services are separate and distinct, differ in material ways, and are governed by different laws and separate arrangements. In the USA, UBS Financial Services, Inc. is a subsidiary of UBS AG and a member of FINRA SIPC. For information, please visit our website at ubs.com/workingwithus. For a full legal disclaimer applicable to the independent investment views produced by UBS, please visit our website at ubs.com/CIO-disclaimer.